the end of Perek Yud. Yesterday we did Hesped on Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. I thought that was a very fascinating chazal. Really, really got a kick out of that one. Okay, now let's do now Pasuk
Ches. Yeah, what page is it? Because there's not books.
Page 842. 842. V'hoya b'chol aretz m'ashem pishnayim bo yikarsu yigavu v'ashlishes yivaser bo. Okay, so we learned this already a few times. This is discussing, according to each one of the commentators, it means something different. Let's say it refers to the world at large. Two-thirds of the world will cease to exist. Indeed, this is something which is quoted, which is cited, this idea, that in times of Mashiach, only something's going to happen, where two-thirds of the world will cease to exist. And one-third of the world will remain, and that one-third will include the Maminim, which is Klal Yisrael, and perhaps others.
Of course it's not meant to be in...
Taken literally.
Miracle.
What?
It's not...
Well, we don't know.
Miracle. It's like three spheres of influence, so to speak.
Okay, so we had many perushim as to what this means. We learned in the Radak, it refers to the three major religions, Yishmael, Edom, and Klal Yisrael. Now, if you take it in that form, then when it says one third, it doesn't mean in numbers, because kiatem hamaat mikol ha'amim. Okay, there are 1. How many billion? There are maybe even 2 billion Muslims, and like something else like almost 2 billion or 1.5 billion Christians. How many Jews are there in the world? 15 million. 15 million, and we'll talk over here at Tipa Shebayam. Compared to how many people have pledged their loyalty to Islam and to Christianity. So when it says that one third will remain in this world, it does not mean one third in numbers. It means then a third of the world, of the beliefs, the belief system in the world. All right, listen, there are so many perushim as to what this means. We learn over here, and as we've said so many times, no one really knows what's going to be when the Mashiach comes, and as also we've mentioned so many times, there are many dimensions. This process has been unfolding for the last 1,952 years since the Churban Bayis Sheni. There are so many dimensions, there's so many different things that come together. And the Pasuk says what it says. Let's see what Chazal say. Chazal say here again on page 842, L'chein therefore hirchiva shol nafsho upo arapia liblichoik. This is the Pasuk in Yeshaya. Back in the day, once upon a time when we started the Shir, this is the first thing that we learned. Anyone remember those days? Chazte Hashem, Baruch Hashem, was still here. When we started this year, the first thing we did was Sefer Yeshaya. And I don't think anyone here online, the only one here is Reb Mechol. Reb Mechol was here that day. Reb Mechol was here, you hear that first day?
I was here also.
The first day. Okay, so we learned Sefer Yeshaya. And there it says in the Pasuk that the grave will widen its mouth, upara pia. It will open wide, okay? It's another expression of opening wide, livlichot, to know without any limitation. Gehenim is very large. It can accommodate everyone. It's like a hotel. plenty of room for everything. They say about, you know, I told you many times, I joke, it's not, I don't know, it's a joke. It's like Lakewood. Lakewood is like Gehenna. Eventually, everyone ends up there. And Michal, you like that one?
Thinking about it.
Have you yet been to Lakewood? You have grandchildren that live in Lakewood?
Yeah.
Oh, see, even Michal has grandchildren that live in Lakewood. And he'll go visit them one day, right?
Someday.
Okay, it's like Gehenim. Eventually, everyone into there. L'chein yuchiva shalom. So therefore, this one passes about Gehenim. Amar esh lakash l'misha m'shayir afilu choyk echad. The Gemara is making a drasha. This is a pasuk in Yeshaya to make a drasha that who is Gehenim for? For a person that omits even one halacha. If a person he is in violation of a simple mitzvah, something that a person, the average person, takes for granted, that qualifies for entrance to Gehenna. You don't need much to get into Gehenim. It's very easy to get in. Open admissions. L'mi shemeshayer afilu chayk echad me'atayra she'enei mishamroi. A person fails to observe even anything in the Torah. That's your ticket. That's open it. That's the ticket to get in free tuition to go to Gehenim. Free accommodations. So Rabbi Yochanan said to the Eish Lakish, it's not nice. That's not nice to say such a thing. Retract. Chazorboch. Take it back what you said. Issue a retraction on your Twitter feed. Apologize. Apologize for saying, can you imagine if Rabbi Yochanan and Eish Lakish had Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts? Could you imagine? It would be a whole different world, right? So take it back. Chazorboch. Retract what you said. Ella afilu loy lomad ella. Just the opposite. Ella afilu loy lomad ella choyk echad nitzol megehenim. Just the opposite. If a person leaves this world and has observed, has learned one word of Torah, he just learned one word, Torah tziva lanu Moshe marasha kihilas Yaakov. That's enough. That's enough to be saved, to be spared from the Dina Shel again. So this, and then he goes on to cite the pasuk, v'ahaya b'chol aretz num Hashem pi shnayim v'yikarsu yigavu. He proves it. Now he's explaining this. Now we are citing our pasuk. If there will be, in the times of Mashiach, 2/3 will cease to exist. The Ashlishis Yivoser Bo, Amar Eish Lakish, Hakavon Lezaru Shel Arpachshad, the seed of Arpachshad, Shemizaru Yotza Am Yisrael Shehu Habein Hashlishi Shel Shem. It's a very beautiful drasha, and he's explaining. We have to see in a moment what is the connection between this drasha and the previous drasha. But the moment we have Arpachshad. This goes back to the children of the children of Noach. Okay, after the end of Parshas Noach, we enumerate all the children of Noach, all the descendants, and there it says Shemizari Yotzei Am Yisrael Shuhu Bein Ashlisha Shel Shem. Parshad is the third son of Shem. Shem, Chom, and Yefes. And after Parshas Noach, we enumerate, we list all of the children of Shem, Chom, and Yefes. And the third child of Shem was Arpachshad. So this opens up a whole new understanding of this pasuk. The Hashlishis doesn't mean a third. In this context, it means number three. Who is number three? The third son of Arpachshad. Shrak Shlishi Yisharu Lizman Hagula. Only the third child of Shem will survive in the times of Mashiach, referring to Klal Yisrael, from whom came Avram. Avram, who turned into Avraham. Amar le Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan said to Eish Lakish, v'nichal l'morayu d'amar...
Well, it says, the Arpachshad v'lod v'aram. Those are the three sons.
Say it again.
It's the three sons listed in Noah, I believe. I'm just winging it. The Arpachshad v'lod v'aram. Those are the three sons.
Okay, so it says that order. So it seems from this Maim Chazal, okay, you make a good point, that even though this is not the first time that this happens, is that even though they're enumerated in an order, it does not necessarily mean that's the order of birth. Shem, Chom, and Yafes. The Torah lists them in terms of their chashivos, in terms of their accomplishments or their potential. And so here this Chazal is telling us that Parashah was the third born, and he was the greatest, and from that came Klal Yisrael. And this, and they, according to Rabbi Reish Lakish, they are the only ones. When this pasuk here says Vashlishis Yivoser Ba, this refers to Yimos HaMashiach, and only Klal Yisrael, who is a descendant of the third son of Shem, will survive. Rabbi Yochanan said, sorry,
Ishmael and Itav came from the same.
Okay, you're making a very good point.
And others.
Okay, you're making a very good point. Not the only ones. You're saying a very good point. I don't know the answer. I don't know. He says, Shemizaroi Yotza Am Yisrael. I don't know, maybe you're right. I don't know.
Not directly.
Okay, so whatever. Okay, you're right. Whatever it means. And the point over here is Amalu, Rabbi Yochanan, Yochanan says, I don't like this. Lonechel Maraya de Amar Luhuhochi, do not say this. Elafilu Shlishi Elafilu Shlishi Shel Noyach, Shehushem, Hashlishi Mimenu Shua Pachshod, Kol Zaro Yishoer. He turns it around and he says, everyone will remain, even what appears to be the most insignificant. Now, what do we mean over here? Because Shem was the third child. Shem, Noach had three children, even though we list Shem first, Shem was really the youngest. And even Shem's third child, which was Apachshad, even they will remain. So in other words, good to the last drop. It's like Maxwell House. Everyone will be there at the time of Mashiach. Every last one. You would think, who's going to be there? Well, Noach had three sons. The first one was Chom. Who's the oldest son? Chom or Yafes. But whatever, the first, Shem was the youngest. The youngest, you know, he gets lost. The Iker is the Bechor. And even if you'll tell me that Shem, you know, he made it, but not all of Shem's children, only Shem's oldest child or his two oldest children.
Yeah, excuse me, Arpachshad was the third because Lud Barom was just younger than Arpachshad. He had five children.
Oh, he had five children.
Elam I forgot the beginning of the process. B'nei Shem, Elam v'Ashur, v'Arpachshad v'Lud Barom.
Okay, so they had more children, five children. But the point over here is that the chiddush over here is that even something which you would think to be insignificant, even that will remain. And therefore, don't say that Hashem's creatures are going to cease to exist at the time of the Muslim Sheikh. Hashem created the world for a purpose. Every non-Jew has a very holy purpose in this world. That's Selam Elokim. Everyone has a purpose. And it's not proper to go and dismiss, to cancel, and to eliminate any one of Hashem's creatures for no good reason. And when the Pasuk here says that a shlishis means even a shlishis, in this context, somehow it means something that's insignificant. For example, we know that a third is called a mi'ut. Why is a third called a mi'ut? Because the remainder is double. If you have the number 100, let's forget about the fraction. Let's just take the whole number, 33. 33 is the highest mi'ut. Why? Why is the highest number you can say the minority called the third? Because what's the remainder of 33 in a number of, starting with 100? 66. Again, forget about the fractions for now. 66. 66 is double. When you are outnumbered 2 to 1, that's called you're a minority. You're insignificant. If you're 34, if you represent 34% of the population, that's not so bad. Because the remainder is not double. The remainder is significantly larger. It's significantly larger, but it's not double. It's not double, then you have some clout. But if you are in a situation where the remainder is double you who you are, that means you're sidelined. So here it says that when Mashiach will come, Hashlishish Yivaser, according to Rabbi Yochanan, even the minorities will be present at the time of Mashiach. A shlishis is a mi'ut. And we're illustrating that by, I'm really reading a little bit more into the pasuk than what it says, because I'm taking the idea of a mi'ut, but we're using it here in this pasuk. Even the third of the third, everything comes from Noach. The world ceased to exist. The only one that was left was Noach and his three sons, Shem, Chom, and Yefes, and their wives. From there came forth the whole world. So if Shem was the youngest, so you would think, you know, the younger brother, he always gets abused by the older brothers. He's a newcomer. And then Shem also has children, and Shem's third child is Arpachshad. So he's also abused. Now, why not the fifth? I don't know. But Mayavsky is making a good point. Why don't we go say the fifth or the third? Okay, whatever it is. But it's we're coming to illustrate according to Rabbi Yochanan is that everyone will have a chelek in the time of Yemos HaMashiach, even the minorities. How is that for a speech of the United Nations? At the General Assembly of the United Nations, of Yimos HaMashiach to read this pasuk V'Yashlishis Yivoser Bo, and to quote this Gemara and say all the minorities are also entitled to enjoy Yimos HaMashiach, so everyone should behave themselves and stop killing each other. This is now, okay, so this is what we take out of that. What is the common thread in this Gemara? And this is something which we never hear about, we don't discuss this. As a backdrop, background to what I'm about to say is everyone is very familiar that when it comes to Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, Shammai and Hillel, everyone knows the story. There was a person, he came to convert, and he came to Beis Shammai. I don't remember all the details, and he said, please convert me, al regal achas, on one foot, please convert me because I want to wear the beautiful Bidei Kohuna. And Beis Shammai did not suffer fools lightly. And he took this fellow and said, you're wasting my time. Get out of here before I blow you to smithereens. Beis Shammai was not very tolerant of Meshugoyim. Beis Hillel, oh, you want to convert? Come, sit down. We have to l'reyacha kamoicha, do this. Beis Hillel was very kind and generous. Okay, we really misunderstand this Chazal exactly. We at face value, we look at Beis Shammai as being an intolerant, impatient person. But certainly that's not correct. There's certainly a lot more going on behind the scenes. But this Maimer Chazal, the two Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, they represented the Nasi and the Av Beis Din. Hillel was, let's explain a little historical background. I only learned this yesterday, clarify this. That during the time of the Bayis Sheni, the Malchus of the Jewish people was corrupt. The Malchus after Zerubbabel, okay, after they first came, after Shimon HaTzadik, and when the Alexander the Great came into the picture, when the Chashmonaim came into the picture, and certainly after the tail end of the Chashmonaim, the political authority of the Jewish people became totally corrupt. The Chashmonaim, that was really the last kings, but even they were not 100% at the end legitimate because they were controlled by. They were controlled by avodim, slaves, and then Edom entered the picture. Edom came along, and they had no siblings. So when the Malchus of Klal Yisrael was basically handed over to the Goy, was basically controlled by Edom and by our enemies, the Sanhedrin decided that for the religious element of Klal Yisrael, we need new leadership. And they split the head of the Sanhedrin into two parts, the Nasi and the Av Beis Din. The institution of the Nasi of the Beis Din only
they
came...
Had it split.
No, the Nasi... Like, no. The Nasi
was like Malchus. The
Nasi the was a result, if I'm not mistaken, it evolved as a direct consequence of the Malchus of Klal Yisrael. There wasn't a real Malchus. There wasn't a real Malchus. There was no Shem and HaMishcha. But even before that, the time of the Chashmonaim. Look, the Chashmonaim lo yosa shevim Yehuda mechayk mivid raglav v'shur shevelei. But that was accepted. That was considered chayru hashah. But at the tail end of the Malchus of the Chashmonaim, when Hordas, who was an eved, took power, and it was illegitimate, and from there on, going down further, there was also a lot of illegitimate things that took place among the Malchus. As a response to this, the Beis Din, the Sanhedrin of Klal Yisrael, which was a healthy institution, they appointed their own leader. And who is that leader? That leader they called the Nasi. And that leader served alongside the Av Beis Din, the chief Talmud Chacham and the Beis Din. So who was the Nasi? Hillel was the Nasi. Hillel, at this point in time, Hillel was the Nasi, and Shammai, these are called the Zugos. Hillel was the Nasi, and Shammai was the Av Bezdin. Okay, there were a whole series of Zugos. They have the Mishnah, all of the Zugos. Again, the Zugos was this the institution of the Zugos, which was basically two leaders of the Sanhedrin, was a consequence, a direct consequence of dealing with the corruption of the political leadership of the Jewish people that was taken over by...
It created a vacuum.
The Goyim took over the political leadership of the Jewish people. They entered into the fray, and there were probably a lot of irreligious Jews at that time as well, which gave them support. And the religious element of the Jewish people needed new leadership, which they were not getting from the Melech, because he wasn't even Jewish. And they had no choice but to, and that leadership was part of the Sanhedrin. And the Sanhedrin split in its leadership by design to a Nasi and an Av Bezdin. The Nasi would serve basically as the role of the Melech, not to be confused with the Melech of the Jewish people, whoever was the acting political leader, whether it was Munvaz, Hilni Hamalka, it was the Chashmonaim, it was Hurdis. There was a whole collection of people that served the last 100 years as the political leaders officially on the books for the Jewish people. But those people were not recognized by the Talmidei Chacham of having any legitimacy in their position. And the Jewish people needed an authority figure that would serve in that role. So they went to the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin had two heads. It had the head of the Nasi and the head of the Av Bezdin. Shammai was the Av Bezdin, and Hillel was the Nasi. This was called a Zug. And there was a whole series of Zugos which are presented in Pirkei Avos. Now, so we're all very familiar.
Rabbi Levine, yeah. Good morning. Naiman here, Yaakov Naiman. Where are you holding it, please? I just don't know.
We're on page 842 in the Mamre Chazal. Pasuk 842, we're discussing this last Mamre Chazal on 842 Pasuk Ches in the Mamre Chazal. So the point I want to make a short point, a small point, and that is, we have over here Shammai and Hillel, we get it. We know that there was a very big disagreement, very big different approach to life. Shammai appears to be very intolerant. Hillel was very tolerant. We know that in Halacha, the Beis Shammai, the Talmidim of Shammai were always very, very strict, very machmir. Beis Hillel was generally lenient. The Halacha almost always follows the opinion of Beis Hillel. Because Beis Shammai, it's too much. Chazal do say that La'osel Lava, when Mashiach comes, we may follow the opinion of Beis Shammai. But this is something you don't talk about very much. The difference in personality between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were a team. They weren't part. They weren't Zugos, because they lived long after the Zugos was during the era of the Churban, of the end, the tail end of the Bayis Sheni. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were Amoraim. They lived about 300 years later, something like that, maybe a little less, but they lived much later. There's a tradition Rabbi Yochanan lived. He lived 400 years. He had Arichas Yamin. That's what they say. He lived to the age of 400 years old. He was an outstanding leader of the Jewish people. He was the Mora, the Asher, the Eretz Yisrael. He was the principal author, composer of the Talmud Yerushalmi. And his brother-in-law was Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish was originally the mafia, the head of the Jewish mafia. He was a bandit. And somehow Rabbi Yochanan was able to win him over. And in fact, he told him, you can marry my sister. Shidduchim, I'll give you my sister in marriage. And he ended up marrying, and they became lifelong friends. Ad kdekach, that when Reish Lakish died, Rabbi Yochanan lost his mind. He was unable to exist without his chavrus. And at what point in time in his life did this happen? I don't know. But they were now. But you don't often see. It's not often that you get a chance to see an insight into their personality. And many times the personality of the person is a driving force in their way of thinking that manifests itself in their piskei halacha. I have a wonderful sefer. I don't use it too much. I use it more often. It's where the Mechaber of this Sefer, we said over a few, we did use the Sefer a couple of times here in the Shir. We should do it more often. He has a mastery of the entire Shas. He knows it inside and out. It's clear from what his writings. And what he does is he takes a person, an Amora or a Tana, and he traces them throughout the entire Shas, and he creates a profile. It's as if he's working for the CIA. And he creates a personality profile of a Tana or an Amora. And then he shows you how all of his Piskei Halacha, or obscure passages in the Talmud, which, you know, you just can take it as a matter of fact, and okay, it says it what it says, but when you know the background, you know his profile, his personality, his way of thinking, then these very obscure passages, they come to life. They come to life with a whole new appreciation of what's going on. When you understand his methodology, one of the classic examples that you don't need to say before is Kam Rabba Shachtel Rab Zera. Rab Zera, he chose, now he's not the only one who does it, was today they would put a label on him. Today in the 21st century, there's no doubt they would say he's clinically depressed. There's no question about that. You would say he suffers from a clinical illness. He was clinically depressed. They would diagnose him with clinical depression. They would give him all these different medicines, of all these medicines that the world has to treat his depression. But in those days, there were no medicines. So how do you treat someone that's clinically depressed? And if you study all of the teachings of Rabbi Zera, they follow a certain pattern that only comes forth in a person that is suffering from severe depression. The famous story was on Purim, Kam Rabba was a joker. It was just the opposite. Rabba, if you follow Rabba's personality throughout Shas, you'll see he was a clown. He thrived on entertainment. He made a lot of jokes. So putting these two people together in the same room is lethal. To put Rabba, a person who is a joker, together with a person who's clinically depressed, Rabbi Zera, it's not a good shidduch. Misery loves company, not entertainment. And what happened? Kam Rabba Shachtel Rab Zera, they were together at a Sudas Purim. So could you imagine you have a person who's clinically depressed, eating with a person who is a joker, and today is Purim, and it only exacerbates the person who's a joker, it only exacerbates them even more. And the person who's depressed, he can't take it. He goes out of his mind. The person that's depressed sees other people happy, he loses his mind. You know, the Litvaks, they love Purim for one reason. They love it. Because they wait a whole year to sing the Pasuk. Echochochal viroisi. Viroir shushon novoicha. Ah, it warms the hearts. Ah, they wait a whole year for the simcha of letting the Megillah so they can say, Evel Godoy La Yehudim. So that was Rab Zera. So when Rab Zera sees someone getting all worked up, getting all happy, he can't deal with this. That's why he died. Not that he died, that's all. Does it mean it literally he slaughtered him?
Yeah.
It says he took up a knife and slit his throat? Is that what it means? Well, some will say yes, and that's fine. But others will tell you that if you understand, it's very hard to accept that a Talmud Chacham would get up and murder another human being. I mean, that's a pretty big accusation. If you want to take what it says in the Gemara literally, so be it. And yeah, maybe it's true. Who says not? He went, it was Purim, he took out a nice knife, a nice butcher knife. Sounds like some horror movie. And he picked up the knife and he cut off his head. Wow, that's pretty serious stuff. And then to say, oh, he woke up the next day, where is he? Oh, let's do now Tchiya Sanesi. Wow, you know, it's quite.
Who was the Sheikh from
Zera? Rabba.
Rabba.
That's quite a thing to say. But when you know the history, the profile, that Rab Zera was clinically, we would say today, okay, in our terminology, whether it's nice or not, that he was ill. He suffered. He suffered from clinical depression. And Rabba was a little bit over the top. He had ADHD, adult, what's it called? Attention deficit disorder.
ADHD.
Kehi Yisa from ADD or adult, or whatever, these letters, adult. What's it again?
ADHD.
ADHD. He suffered, he was a little bit hyperactive. This is not a good shidduch. And when it says, Kom Rabba Shachte L'Rebbe Zera, when you know their profile, what it means is, it was a toxic meeting between two people that don't belong together. And it got out of hand, where Rabba basically had a meltdown. Had a meltdown because Rabba was going a little bit too far in his hyperactivity.
Rabbi Zera had a meltdown.
Doesn't mean literally he slaughtered him. He had a meltdown because he could not deal with this frolicking that was going on. A person that's clearly depressed and sees someone that goes way over the top. A person who generally is over the top. And now on Purim, he really goes over the top. And they're sitting together, locked in a room together. He had a meltdown. Doesn't mean that he murdered him, that he died. So what did he do? He had to take him for treatment. He sent him to therapy. That's what it means. It doesn't mean that he did trias ha-mesim mamish. He sent him to a therapist who was able to pull him out of his severe depression. The following year, they said, let's try this again. Who says the therapist will be successful this year? So you see, you have a piece of the Gemara. When they teach this to you in kindergarten, and they tell you that we have two regular, ordinary people. One person gets up on Purim, takes out a butcher knife, and he slaughters it, and he cuts off the head of someone else. And what does he do? The next day, he says, Hashem, Hashem, Tchias HaMesim, miracle. Next year, let's do this again. Who says this year the Shem Hashem is going to work? But when you get a little bit older and you learn about the profile, you learn about their background, and you discover their Abzera was a very sad person. He was always saying, Tikkun Chatzos. He was always in a state of mourning. And Rabba was a joker, always making jokes. And then you put them together on Purim, where the environment is a little bit over the top, that triggered a horrible reaction in the mind of Rabbi Zera, which the Gemara calls Shechita. He was reduced to a state of depression where he was basically dysfunctional totally. And he had to be sent off to the best therapist in the world to pull him out of that state of depression. And that's what the Gemara calls a miracle, because it doesn't always work. And when they had another opportunity to do this again, to be put in such a situation that would not be healthy for the mind of Rabbi Zera says, you know, let's not take our chances. Okay, so that is a classic example of what this Sefer does. Of taking but when you read a passage of Gemara, is to first go to the CIA and take out their profile, or go to Facebook. Facebook has profiles also on everyone. Yeah, they showed yesterday how Facebook, they read everyone's, they have they're an insider who shows that when it comes to the vaccine hesitancy, every single person on Facebook is given a score of 1 to 5. From their comments on their anything that they post is read by an algorithm, and the algorithm assigns a number. This is what the people who have been Facebook, they admit it. They said what they do is the algorithm reads your comments, and the algorithm is able to pick up keywords in your writing, and they're able to determine on a level of 1 to 5 what is your hesitancy to take the vaccine. And if you're given a 5, then you are banned, because in the opinion of Facebook, the vaccine is the God's gift to this world. I'm not commenting good or bad. I'm just saying that this is their narrative, and therefore, if you are in violation of that narrative, so then you are banned. If you are a four, they do this. If you're a two, if you're a one, you're pushed down. That you should not, your comments are buried.
It's hard to make a prediction based on Facebook alone, the way you're saying regarding vaccines, because not everybody goes on Facebook.
I'm talking about those who go. I'm not saying they'll go. But I'm just doing this as an example, is that people are being profiled. Everything.
Social credit system.
Okay.
Where they monitor them that way.
There is now. Everything is being profiled. I'm not. I don't care. This is not a topic. But the point is that when you study a Tana or an Amora throughout the entire Shas, 2011 Daf Gemara, you could do the same thing, and you should do the same thing. It's to profile the Tanoim and the Amoraim. Take every single issue that there is out there in the world. Profile them and rate them on a level of whatever, 1 to 10, and then you will begin to discover a pattern in their approach to halacha, to their approach to life, to their approach to yiras shamayim, maisim tovim, in a good way, not in a bad way, in a good way. None of my business. Look, when it comes. As far as we're concerned, when it comes to what would we do if we were on Facebook, we would profile every single person who's on Facebook if they're an anti-Semite. And if someone is a 5, get rid of them. Someone is a 1, you bury them. Okay, because that's our narrative. I'm not. It's none of my business. I'm just going to give you an example to bring out that in the Gemara, it's the same thing. In the Talmud, in a positive way, there is a concept of profiling Tanoim Amoraim. They're predictable, and that's a healthy thing. When a person's behavior follows a consistent pattern, that is a sign of health. A person that is unpredictable is a danger to society. That's a very big danger when you don't know what the person's going to do. That's dangerous. There's a certain expectation.
Rabbi, I'm sorry to interrupt again. For people who have limited time to learn, I think there's more and more important things to do than to study the psychology of the Amoraim. You know, there's more Torah Lishma to learn than to...
Everything is Torah. Everything is Torah. Everything is Torah.
And the more you learn, that's how you develop your thought process.
The Gemara talks of
Shammai
and Hillel. Shammai and Hillel. Shammai and Hillel, the Chazal profile them. And they say Shammai did not suffer fools lightly, and Hillel was extremely kind and generous. And I'm taking
but
this.
That's the funny part about that is, if you look at Pirkei Avos, Perek Aleph, Shammai is the one who says, "Have you bekabel kol avim to save upon of Yofos?"
So that requires explanation. So the point over here is all this over here is coming to bring up, which we don't come across in this Maamar Chazal. Over here we have two conversations between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. And it speaks volumes as to their, this gives us choymer to profile them, to speak volumes about their whole approach to life. And when you read a machloikis between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, which are only hundreds of maybe even more than hundreds of disputes between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, it is a very important factor to put in this profiling to appreciate their disagreements in halacha. And here we have two stories. One is based upon the pasuk that we just quoted. Is what's how do you read pshat in this pasuk? Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Reish Lakish says it means that the world will come to an end. The world will come to an end, doom and gloom. It says v'hashlishus yishoer bo. What does it mean hashlishus? It means everything that Hashem created will cease to exist, with the exception of one select group, the third child of Shem, Arpachshad. That's it. What about all? What about Hashem's creation? All of humanity, gone. Reish Lakish has no problem saying this, that the world, all of humanity, will disappear like a puff of smoke, gone. And Rabbi Yochanan gives him Musa. Reish Lakish, it's not derech eretz to say such a thing about a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that he's going to destroy his world. How could you talk like that? You have to be optimistic, just the opposite. Read the pasuk that even the most insignificant elements of humanity will exist in the times of Mashiach. V'hashlishes, Even the third, which as we explained, the third means the miut, even that will be present to witness the revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the other Maamar Chazal, that wasn't part of our post, but was part of the introduction to this discussion, which I think really is important because it shows the consistency in their thought process, was the first, what is your ticket to Gehenim? So Reish Lakish said, we're all going there. Gehenim is open admissions. Every single person is going to end up in Gehenim, because if you fail to guard even the most insignificant element of the Torah, that's your ticket to Gehenim. And Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, how dare you? How dare you talk like that? Yeah. It's not Derech Eretz, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just the opposite. If a person learns one word of Torah, that's his exemption, his shtar patur, not to go to Gehenna, his ticket out of Gehenna. So this is a consistent pattern of behavior between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, to look at the world either as a pessimist or an optimist, or to look at the world with a very critical, harsh view. And when you take this idea in mind, and the next time we learn a Daf Gemara, and you come across Machlokes Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, bear this in mind. Bear this idea in mind, and it will help us. See, Rabbi Nyman, I think with this idea, the next time you learn a Daf, a Machlokes Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, bear this in mind. Bear this Maamar Chazal in mind. The attitude, the mindset of Reish Lakish versus the mindset of Rabbi Yochanan, and when you learn a halachic piece of Gemara and you see how they disagree, see if this mindset has influence on their reasoning in their position towards how they understand a halacha. And you sir, and certainly this is a great enhancement to appreciate what they're trying to say. There is a lot to be gained by profiling Tannaim and Amoraim. There's an enormous advantage to be gained. See, this today, profiling is a dirty word in secular society. What?
It's better than the high school.
What do you mean better than the high school books?
The high school Rabbanim and Dunham books.
The best example is always Shimon ben Shattuck. Have you marked Elach for SA? Have you marked Elach for SA? Because he was the son, because they didn't. So that was the most important thing to him. You know, I mean, his life experience tells you what's on his mind.
Okay, but it's not just only a life experience. Okay, that's also true life experience, but it's also just, you know, Hashem makes every person different. Certain people, there's a consistent, a healthy person has a consistent pattern of behavior. A person that's not stable, unfortunately, is unpredictable. Being unpredictable is not a healthy thing. The Tannaim and the Amoraim are healthy people. And the proof that they're healthy people is they are consistent. Okay, they are consistent in their approach and their approach to everything. That's why they have been preserved in the Talmud Bavli. I've told you this before. This made a very powerful impression on me. I asked once Rav Soloveitchik, I asked him, why are the Briskas, why are the Soloveitchiks obsessed with the Rambam? Why the Rambam? There are other Rishonim. Why don't all the Soloveitchik family devote their life to Rashi? Why don't doesn't the Soloveitchik family devote their life to the Ramban, to the Ran, to the Rashba? There are so many great people who have given Klal Yisrael so much. Why have the Soloveitchik family devoted their life to study the Rambam? The Rambam, if you think about it, really does not fit in the lifestyle of the Soloveitchik family. If the Rambam would come today, the Soloveitchik family wouldn't have in the Rambam shul. The Rambam, he went to work, he was a doctor, he was a very, very practical, down-to-earth person. We learn from his writings, he was very, very, his whole persona doesn't really fit with Brisk and the Soloveitchik family. So why are the Soloveitchiks obsessed with the Rambam? So he said to me, very forcefully, he said to me something which made a very powerful impression on me. He says to me, the answer is very simple. He says, when you have a dilemma, let's say in a Hilchas Shabbos, you want to know what is the halach in Hilchas Shabbos. You can open up a Rambam in Hilchas Mikvois, or in Hilchas Kodshim, or Hilchas Lulav Esrog, and read a Rambam there, and from there you'll be able to know what the Rambam is going to paskin by Hilchas Shabbos. There is no one among all of the Rishonim that comes even close to a consistency in a way of thinking, in a way of approaching halacha like the Rambam. The Rambam wrote on Kol HaTorah Kula. Not only did he write on Kol HaTorah Kula, everything that he wrote on Kol HaTorah Kula is 100% consistent with no deviation. So if you have a dilemma in Hilchas Shabbos, you can go to any sugya in the world, any sugya in B'chol HaTorah Kula, analyze the Rambam, understand his way of thinking, his approach, and you can use that as a foundation to understand a sugya somewhere else. You can't do that with Rashi. You can't do that with Tosfos. You can't do that with the Rashi and the Ran. Because it's very clear from their writings that they are different tekufos in their life. And there is inconsistency in how they studied Masechta Shabbos versus how they studied Masechta Makos. Rashi and Masechta Makos is in the beginning of, until Rashi retired, but in the beginning of Masechta Makos, is not the way Rashi approaches a sugya in Masechta Zvachim. And the way the Rashba learns a piece of Gemara in one Masechta is not the way the Rashba learns a piece of Gemara in another Masechta. There is a lack of consistency. And when that occurs, it's a problem. It's a problem. The Rambam has the gift of consistency throughout everything B'chol HaTorah Kula. And this is something that is extremely endearing, extremely enjoyable, powerful, that no other Rishon offers. And the same thing is true when it comes to every Tana and every Al. If you can say that about the Rambam, Allah has kama v'kama, ben b'nei shel kal v'chomer, when Talmud preserves the Amoraim and the Tanoim, we have a right to assume that they are consistent. These are healthy-minded people, and they are thoroughly consistent in their approach to everything, every sugya throughout the entire Shas. And thus, there is a gain, there is a tremendous gain, benefit to be gained in profiling Tanoim and Amoraim. The word profiling today is a dirty word. It has a very bad connotation, but it's not. The word profiling just means to uncover a consistent pattern of thought, an action that goes through a person from beginning to end. But to do that, you have to be dealing with a person that's healthy, that's not a wishy-washy, not a politician. Okay, someone that stays the course from beginning to end. And every person that is preserved in the Talmud, it's a given. That is a prerequisite. If you're going to be preserved in the 2,711 pages of the Talmud, you have to be healthy. A healthy mind. Healthy mind doesn't mean you don't get depressed. You don't. It means you're consistent. And that is always, you know, like in Shidduchim, the people, they ask questions about Shidduchim, the professionals who deal with Shidduchim, today they always, does he have Simcha Sachayim? A whole new. Is the person, they ask all these questions. Does he have a plan in life? Does he have this? Does he have that? These are all very nice questions, but the professionals who really know privately when they investigate people, you know what they ask? They ask, is he stable? Is he consistent? Does he have a consistent pattern of behavior? That's the most important thing. A person should be a healthy person, a consistent pattern of behavior. That's the most important thing. No, is he going to do this, do that? You know, life changes very quickly. But a person who is stable, who is consistent, is predictable, that's priceless. That's priceless. And that's why this piece of Gemara over here is very, very important. What this Maamar Chazal has done for us is a very important lesson. Given us two Maamar Chazal, we see exactly the same consistent pattern of behavior between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. It brings out the difference between the two. It shows their mindset. And that can be a great advantage when learning any passage in the Gemara to understand where they're coming from. Next, my Chazal pasuk tes revesi es hashlishus ba'ish utzuraftim kitzroif es hakesef. I'm going to bring this dirt into the fire. I'm going to purify them. Kitzroif es hakesef, like one purifies, one refines silver. Beishamai, Omer Shammai says sholosh kitos hein liyoyim hadin. So Beishamai says there are three groups liyoyim hadin b'shas tchias amesim. Okay, this is getting all very esoteric stuff. What's really asalavo? Acha shol tzadikim gemurim. And they are going to be beinonim over here in the brackets. The editor inserted a dilgul with chias amesim, and one is chias amesim. Okay, so beinonim yordim legehenim umitzafzifim. The beinonim will descend to Gehenim, and they will bubble. What does it mean bubble? They can bubble in the fire of Gehenim. It means tzarkim ubaychem mitach yisurim zman mut. They're going to suffer. They're going to suffer the fires of him for a short.
Bubble, it means cry out.
Yes.
It
means to cry out?
Yes.
All right.
To make noises.
I thought the word mitzavtsa means like, okay, whatever, fine, whatever. Tzaykim aboichim, they're going to cry, they're going to scream out and cry from suffering. The oilin, only for a short time, then they will ascend. V'nichnasim l'chaye ha'oilim hazeh. Okay, it doesn't say l'chaye ho'ilam haba. It says l'chaye ho'ilam hazeh. T'chiyas ha'mesim. Shenema, what's the source of Beis Shammai? Our pasuk that we learned. Ve'heveisiyas ha'shlishis. This is a third. The third here are the beinonim. A new interpretation of the word shlishis. We have so many pedushim as who the shlishis are. A third of the world. It means one of the three religions. Or does it mean, like we just learned before, does it mean that the third child, our pachshad, what does it mean? Here we have a new interpretation. There are tzadikim, rishayim, and beinonim. The world is divided into three parts. The beinonim are going to be, they're going to be put into a kiln, that's gehenim, and they're going to be purified, and they will ascend. Utzraftim, kitzreif, esakesim, lechantim, I will test them, kivchoyim, esazov, hu yikro vishmi. They will call out my name. Hashem brings death and he brings life. And these people, they will go to Gehenim. Shol here means Gehenim. Va'yoal. Beis Hillel Oimrim. Beis Hillel says, V'rav Chesed. No, they're not going to go to Gehenim, period. The Beinonim, 50-50, you get a pass. You get a pass, you do not go period to Gehenim. Mate klapi chesed ve'ein yardim ligehinom. So here again, another pattern, this is already all, everyone knows this, the Beis Shammai, Hillel, this is famous, that they have a very different approach to life, and Shammai is always very tough, very, very tough, very strict. Midas Hadin, Beis Hillel is Midas Harachnim, Midas Hadin demands that they go to Gehenim, and they be purified, and his source is this pasuk. Beis Hillel says no. What does Beis Hillel do with this pasuk? The Gemara does not tell us, but he disagrees. He holds that the Beinonim will not go to Gehenna; they will go straight to Gan Eden. They will not. This part of the puzzle, a pasuk. Now I want to just tell you, we'll show you one thought. There's a very classic vart. I don't know who says this. It's probably said by many people. Here's the ask a child: who is more pure, a person that was never Tameh, or a person that was Tameh and went to the mikvah and became pure? Who, It could be even the Rishonim, maybe the Rambam says this. I think it could be the Rambam says this. Ask him, who would you say has a greater degree of purity? A person who never sinned, or a person, let's say, who was never contaminated, never came in contact with Tumah, or a person who did come in contact with Tumah, but went through the process of Tahara. So if you would ask me, I would say the person that was never Toyim Tamchet, the person that was never Tame, the person was fortunate to live in an island where there are no dead bodies, and there are no dead animals, and he never came in contact with a corpse or anything that is contaminated. So he is tar from the womb, from the moment he came out of his mother's womb, and he never came in contact with Tumah. A person who came in contact with Tumah, he suffered contamination. So now you have to go through a process of Tahara. That's not so much fun. So even when you go through the Tahara and you become tar, there's still going to be this stigma that once upon a time on the record, this person was once upon a time Tamei.
Right in today's daf, you have there by Paradumov, is our Torah, it's right that he was once Tamei.
He was once Tamei. So what are Chazal, what are the Rambam, and the Rambam, other Rishonim, they say, the person who was Tamei and became Tahar, he is in a better, in a stronger position. Because it is only upon him does the Torah declare Yitahar. Only upon a person, the Torah nowhere, the whole HaTorah Kula says about a person who never came in contact with contamination that he is tar. By default, he's tar.
That is the same argument as who is greater, a Baal Tshuva or someone who never sins? And the Pasuk says,
the Mokom Shabalei Teshuva Omdim Afilu Tzadikim Gemurim Eina Yecholim La'amot.
Right.
This is a very controversial statement, and it's a very dangerous statement because no one is inviting upon themselves Tumah. No one should ever dare want to bring upon themselves Tumah. No one, you have a choice between being a Baal Tshuva and being a Tzadik Meikaro. That's a given person should be a Tzadik Meikaro. Yet, it's something that cannot be ignored, that the only one upon whom the Torah says is Tahar is the individual who was Tomei and went through the process of Tahara. Upon him, the Torah says, the Achar Kein, he's Tahar. But nowhere, b'chol ha-Torah kula, does it ever say that concerning a person that never came in contact with a source of contamination, that he is Tahar. We assume he's Tahar because he never came in contact with Tumah, so he's Tahar. But the Torah never labeled him as Tahar. In a computer database, he's not going to show up. If you type into the computer, who's Tahar? Give me a list of all the people who are Tahar. He's not going to show up. Why not? Because the Torah never labeled him. The only one that got the label Tahar are the people who went to the mikveh. They swiped their credit card in the mikveh. So now they're registered. They've been registered. So we know that you went to the mikveh. So that we know that you're to the Torah declared that you're Tahar. All right, this is something which requires, this is a very philosophical idea, and obviously requires a lot of thought to nuance what exactly this means. What am I trying to tell you over here? It says here the same exact thing by the people about Gehenim. When it comes to the next world, it comes to Trias HaMesim, according to Shammai says there are three groups. There are Tzadikim, there are Rishonim, and there are Beinonim. It's now time for Trias HaMesim. Who's coming back for Trias HaMesim according to Beis Shammai? Well, the Tzadikim. Very nice. Here they are. Here are the Tzadikim. They're walking the streets. Here they are. What about the Rishonim? No. They're not coming back. They're not going to be around. Okay, good. They're not here. What about the Beinonim? Oh, the Beinonim. Beis Shammai says they're in trouble. They have to first go on a detour. They have to first be shipped off to Gehenim and suffer there a little bit. And then when they're purified, they can come here. They can Trias HaMesim. And now what does it say? That when these new arrivals show up in this world after going through the process of Gehenim, what does it say? The Pasuk says, these people, they will, who yikra v'shmi, when they dive into me, vani ene, I'll answer them instantly. Ani ene oiso. Amarti, I said about them, Amihu, you're my people. V'hu yoimar, and they will say, Hashem Elokai. Wait a minute, what about the tzaddikim? Does it say this about the tzaddikim? When the tzaddikim will cry out to Hashem, that Hashem will answer them? Does Hashem give the tzaddikim the honor by saying about the tzaddikim that you are my people? Well, it has to be, right? How could it not be that a person's a tzaddik meikaroi who never sinned, who did not need to go to Gehenim, and now marries Tchias HaMesim? How could it be that he's not called Hashem's people? How could it be that who yikur b'shmi, that he'll call out Hashem will answer? How could it be? It has to be that that's right, it has to be. But yet there's a chavivos. It only says this incredible, powerful expression of love and endearment by the Beinonim. It doesn't say this about the Tzaddikim. It only says this about the Beinonim. They are now getting this incredible label and chiba that the Tzaddikim Gemurim are not getting. How do you know that? Just like the mikvah. The one that was Tameh and went to Mikvah, upon him, the Torah gives a label, Tar. But the one that never came in contact with Tumah, the Torah never gave the label, Tar. My high. It's something that, again, it's something to think about. And obviously the answer has something to do with that a person who struggles, that's what you're here for. A person who's a tzaddik meikaroi has an unfair advantage. A person that's a tzaddik meikaroi is just too easy. It's too easy. Okay, so, you know, the tzaddik is a tzaddik. No one's denying the fact that tzaddik. But the Beinoni, he hustles in this world. It's a struggle. And that's the purpose of this world. No one came to this world for a free lunch. He came here to hustle. And everyone on their Madrega is really a Beinoni. Even what we call the tzaddikim gemurim, there has to be in the tzaddikim gemurim an element, some element of them that is a Beinoni, where they struggle. And that struggle is the chavivos that a Kodesh Baruch Hu yearns for. To see a person, sheva pomim yipol tzaddik v'kom. The tzaddik, he falls 7 times, but he gets up. That struggle is what creates this pasuk of hu yikur v'shmi v'ani enoysa v'amateni and mihu v'hu yomar Hashem Elokai. Okay, that concludes the section. We're now up to Perek Yud Dalid. We did that. We'll make sure we did everything we want to do over here. We did everything we're supposed to do. Baruch Hashem. Okay, so Bishop, tomorrow we will proceed to the last Perek of Sefer Zechariah, the finale. The finale begins tomorrow. Okay, we'll take a short break. Afterwards, I want to spend one more day on Inyanim of Ner Shabbos. Yesterday, we spoke about the number of candles and what happens if a woman forgets Shabbos and Yom Tov, some of the lumdis. So today, we spent significant time on Ner Shabbos, but I have new material, new chidushim, new material about Ner Shabbos, which I would like to share with you after we come back in a few moments.
What you just were saying now is the answer to Vinixov and Israel Zora on last week's parsha. Why should she be
blessed
as a chayta niska? Because she had the taiva, she was nista with somebody and had a tremendous taiva, and she overcame her taiva. That's her reward. A person who doesn't have the taiva doesn't get that reward. That's the answer. So everyone who's an Akara should be in this with a man, and then that's the question that the